This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Hey, you're listening to the Bite Size Business Breakfast. Everything that Richard Dean and myself have been speaking about on Wednesday, the 16th of March. And that has been a huge focus on the DWA share sale. Now that we've got a few details and some dates about what's going to happen, we've been speaking to the analyst Athira Prasad about what we might see and whether or not DWA is an attractive buy. We've also been having a chat, speaking about buying, about what rising wheat and oil prices mean for your pizza and the cost of delivering it. That's with the guys from Freedom Pizza and Crush Brands. Ian O'Hun is the founder and CEO there. Plus, how do you make sure that that bargain you've spotted online isn't a scam? We've got a bit of advice from Harris Ali Khan of Dubizzle. All of that, plus Serena has your latest news.
Morning, guys.
And we're talking about situations happening from London.
London calling through the faraway towns. Now war is declared and battle come down.
And that's because we seem to have confirmation within the past few minutes that Boris Johnson is indeed coming to the UAE. Brandy Scott, are you responsible for this?
I am indeed. I'm just having a little bit of a back and forth with the British Embassy, actually, that is making me smile this morning.
So the multiple media reports over the past 24 hours suggested that Boris Johnson, the British Prime Minister, was coming to the UAE and Saudi Arabia today for talks about releasing more oil. Now, Serena Kelly, you and I were chatting this morning when we came in about 5:30. We hadn't had official confirmation either from the UAE official news agency WAM,
yep,
or from Number 10 Downing Street on its Twitter feed. We all kind of knew he was coming, but there was just no official confirmation, was there?
Yeah, so thanks, Brandy, for that one. But UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson was reportedly, of course, set to visit the UAE today. And it's a one-day visit, reportedly. And he's supposed to be meeting with His Highness Sheikh Mohammed bin Zayed Al Nahyan, Crown Prince of Abu Dhabi and Deputy Supreme Commander of the UAE Armed Forces, because they're going to discuss, I know you mentioned oil, Richard, but they're discussing, of course, energy falls into that, regional security and humanitarian relief as well. He's then set to travel to Saudi Arabia, where he will meet with the Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman.
Okay, we'll be keeping an eye on this all day today. Brandy, I'm not going to ask you to reveal your sources. What can you tell us, if anything?
I'm just putting in a bid for a chat with Boris.
Well, you are friends, aren't you? Because it was you that the Eighth Emirate quote.
I'm not
getting
very far.
The Eighth Emirate quote that he made famously about 6 or 7 years ago during a visit to the UAE. It was you that he gave that quote to, wasn't it?
He did say it on our show, indeed. Do you know what's really interesting? I'm also having a look at the communique that the British Embassy here has just put out about discussing energy security, reducing volatility in energy prices and food prices, etc., which says all very much what you would expect it to say. But there's also quite a bit here about renewables. In addition to potential further measures to increase oil production, which we know and have been saying for a couple of days is you know, one of the things obviously they want to achieve for this visit, the Prime Minister's focused on diversifying the UK's energy supply and working with international partners to ramp up renewables.
And we know, so renewables, Masdar in Abu Dhabi have done a huge amount of work in the UK. I mean, the UK is sometimes referred to as the Saudi Arabia of wind power because it's an island in the North Atlantic, and this is blowing a gale 330 days a year. So you've got the Thames Estuary, one of the world's biggest wind farms, which was built not by Masdar, but Masdar had a massive part in that. They're doing a lot of work up in Scotland as well. Again, you know, close to Norway in the North Sea, because there's just so much wind power there.
It's a really interesting thing to include here, as well as talking about the need for stabilisation of energy prices and basically more oil, please. They mention the fact that as part of the visit, the Al Fanar Group in Saudi Arabia is going to confirm £1 billion investment into a green fuels project in Teesside.
Serena Kelly, there's lots to get through this morning. Should we stay with sustainable energy now? Because I know you've got some details on the Zayed Sustainability Prize. What can you tell us about that?
So basically, submissions are now open for the 2023 edition. You've got 11 million dirhams that comes with the Zayed Sustainability Prize. The awards happen every year. We've spoken about them before. It's basically a chance for people to showcase ideas, technology, designs that are just focusing on helping make people's lives better. So small small to medium enterprises, non-profit organisations and high schools across the world can apply, and you need to do so online. It's ZayedSustainabilityPrize.com, and you have until July 6th. Now, there's five categories: health, food, energy, water and global high schools. Your applications are then put through a three-stage process of evaluation, and then the winners will be announced during the awards ceremony, and that happens during Abu Dhabi Sustainability Week next year. But to date, the prize has recognized a total of 96 winners, and more than 370 million people have benefited from the projects launched by previous prize winners as well. So definitely a very worthwhile award system.
Good stuff. Right then, as I mentioned, lots to get through today. Let's start with saving schemes for expats here in Dubai, because we've had an update.
Yes, that's right. So a roadmap is being drawn up for implementing that newly announced savings scheme. And this was for foreign employees working for Dubai government entities. So the steering committee, who are overseeing all of this, said non-Emirati workers will be enrolled in the scheme in phases. So according to Abdullah Al-Basti, Secretary General of the Executive Council of the Dubai and Chairman of the Committee, the scheme will protect the rights of employees by providing them with opportunities to invest or protect their end of service benefits. It will provide several investment options with varying returns and risks, including Sharia compliant portfolios as well. Expect more in-depth details regarding this as it develops, because obviously the steering committee are now currently working on this. But if you need more details, everything is up on the Aero News Centre app.
Can I get a bit more detail on this big drug bust that you mentioned in the headlines?
Yeah, so it's Dubai Customs. They've seized 5.6 kilos of illegal substances, and it was at Dubai International Airport. So what happened was, it was being brought in by a female traveller. She was arriving from a Latin American country. And according to national news agency WAM, just a routine x-ray, they spotted at the bottom of her suitcase unusually dense looking blackness on the suitcase. They then discovered a secret pocket inside the lining, the inner lining, and that was filled with black plastic bags wrapped in transparent adhesive that contained 3.2 kilos of illegal substances. And then another 2,473 grams were found. It was all concealed in bottles of body care products, so like shampoo, body moisturizer. But yeah, that was Dubai Customs, definitely on top of their game.
Good stuff. Now, traffic fines in Dubai.
So in case you missed it, this was something that was announced over yesterday. But motorists in Dubai can now pay off their traffic fines in interest-free installments. So this is according to Dubai Police. They were tweeting the information saying payment can be made via the fines installment service. So it can be done over 3, 6 or 12 months. If you need to see the list of eligible banks, that's on the Aero News Centre.
Finally, a quick update on COVID cases here in the UAE.
Yep. If you're looking over the last few days, you've had 296 cases on Monday, 280 on Tuesday, and that's after more than 345,000 tests. No fatalities now for a whole week. And your active cases dropping from 31,095 to 30,428.
Sabrina Kelly, thank you very much indeed.
More details on the Aero News Centre app.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast.
Where we, like everybody else, are still discussing the price of fuel. Oil down at the moment, around 30% to just $100 a barrel. The group view here on the Business Breakfast is if you are in triple figures, it's not cheap. So what does it mean for the cost of your pizza delivery? We are joined by Crush Brand CEO Richard Dean. The walk-on music. Crush Brand CEO, the Freedom Pizza people, the founder and CEO there, Ian Ohan. Ian, it's lovely to speak to you. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
And your guys are out there delivering everything from salads to Richard Dean to poke bowls to Freedom Pizzas. How is the rising cost of fuel affecting you?
Well, look, I think it's relatively low compared to other markets, and it has a nominal impact for us. We, as a company, pay the difference, of course. We have no views of trying to increase prices. We have our same 5 dirham delivery charge. across the board, and we have no intention of increasing that. I suspect that the oil price rise will be relatively blunted over the foreseeable future. So we don't see any changes to our pricing.
How many bikes are you running, Ian?
We're running about 150 delivery bikes at the moment.
So what we've seen with the oil price rising over the last couple of months, what kind of percentage increase has that been for your fuel bill?
Oh, it's been about, I think overall, with the changes have been gradual, it's been about a 15 or 20% increase in fuel. But for us, it's fine. It's part of our delivery model. We're not trying to make a profit on delivery on locale. For third-party companies, I suspect it'll affect the drivers themselves because they are forced to pay for their own rising cost of petrol. Because as a lot of most of the third-party delivery companies use third-party contracted labor, who will be forced to pay for the extra cost. We as a company at Locale will absorb those costs on behalf of our drivers.
Are you seeing or feeling the increased prices anywhere else, whether it's keeping the pizza ovens hot or keeping the lights on?
Not so much as a result. It's still early days in terms of supply chain. We experienced supply chain disruptions and supply chain increases that sort of began with COVID. I suspect that these are the types of increases that we'll feel over time. I do anticipate further escalation and inflationary pressures.
And the big one, of course, that everyone is talking about is wheat, and you make pizza.
Yes. So we are actively ordering as many containers of our flour mixture, our multigrain flour mixture, as we can at the moment to try and brace for that. I do think these are relatively short-lived supply shocks that over, 6 to 12 months' time will level themselves out. And so, we take a longer-term view. We have no intention of increasing prices to our customers.
Which is noble of you. You mentioned the flour mix, the wheat that you're already buying. Has the price there already risen? No pun intended. Or are you expecting to see that down the road?
Prices have gone up about 10 to 15% throughout COVID, during the course of the COVID pandemic. So they've already gone up. We are just pricing our next orders now. And whilst I don't have complete confirmation, I have no doubt that the prices will increase. The price of wheat, as you mentioned, is a big part of our flour blend. And, we fully expect those prices to increase further.
How much can you absorb that into your margins, Ian?
Well, I think it's our duty. As I said, I think some of these supply shocks are and price increases I see them as relatively temporary. If this were to go on for 18 or 24 months, I think we'd have to reconsider. But our anticipation is that this will level itself out over 12 to 24 months. We are we are very accustomed to supply chain sort of ups and downs. As long as on average we keep a relatively reasonable margin, we feel that in the current environment, in particular with customers having to absorb higher fuel prices, it's for us it's a service and it's our duty as a company to maintain the prices as is.
Ian O'Hearn is the founder and CEO of Crush Brands. They are the Freedom Pizza as well as many other foodstuffs people.
Yeah, and I could see his point because you want to maintain your market share, don't you? Mm-hmm. Yes, could he stick a 1 or 2 dirham surcharge on their delivery fee? Of course he could. His delivery fee is 5 dirhams. I think the standard for the apps is 7 dirhams, am I right?
Depending if you become like a member, which is something I don't want to think about too much.
Exactly.
You're a repeat visitor. You thought of becoming a member.
I got that offer as well. And I thought, no, because I just don't want to be. I should be having home-cooked food.
I once had the guys at Baskin Robbins offer me credit because they knew I was good for it.
Oh, dear. Yes.
You worry.
It's not a compliment, is it? But I get in terms of market share. He's in a competitive industry. What's he said? Pizzas, salads, baguettes. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's not that competitive. But whatever. But yeah, you don't want to lose market share by ramping up your prices in the short term. So you keep your customers and, play the long game. So I get why he's doing that. But honestly, whether it was getting a ride with Careem or Uber or Dubai taxis or ordering a pizza from Ian or anyone else, honestly, if there was an extra couple of dirhams on that now, would I balk at it? No. I think, that's fair enough. The airlines do it in a heartbeat, don't they?
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Where we are talking about the next stock market listing here in Dubai. I've got the power. Diwa set to list 6.5% of its share capital on the DFM. Very pleased to be joined by Athera Prasad, who is Director of Macroeconomics at NASA Saidi and Associates. Athera, it's lovely to speak to you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
So we knew a Diwa lister was coming, but now we've got details. What do you make of them?
The first one that's officially been launched is into the IPO process after the announcement came that 10 state-owned firms would be listing, which in itself is a good sign. It's a very solid, strong company that is about to list. Its profile is quite high. And it's been valued at around 25 billion or so, which means that it would be the largest on the DFM. You would see that this is a company that is quite integral into the Dubai economy, its future plans, its expansion plans, and a company that has got a very solid, firm footing into how the economy operates. So it's a company that right now has about a million or so customers, and you're expecting the population of Dubai to increase. And it fits right into Dubai's expansion plans, and also in terms of how it plans to transition into a net zero economy by 2050, and also in terms of its clean energy targets, aiming towards 100% clean energy by 2050. So this is a company that kind of fits in right in the center of Dubai's expansion plans, especially in its role towards decarbonization and moving towards a cleaner, greener future. So all in all, it will be a very good listing for the exchange. And if it picks up after it's listed, then it sure is a trendsetter in that way.
Let's talk about the money. You mentioned it briefly there, but Diwa hasn't said how much it's looking to raise with this offering, but we know that it's going to be offering 3.25 billion shares, 6.5% of its share capital.
Yes.
You presumably have done the maths.
Yes. Well, in terms of financial performance, you can expect, based on what they have already presented, that it's a company that is not looking to raise debt in the next 5 years. They have a good, solid financial performance. They have been investing a lot into the infrastructure of in its substations and so on. And they are very forward-looking in terms of, you know, anticipating how the economy is going to grow. They are building substations. They are thinking of the future in terms of what technology do we invest in terms of energy storage, in terms of renewable energy. They are thinking in terms of green hydrogen projects. So this is a company that is kind of looking forward into the, you know, what you can expect as the road to decarbonization for the UAE. So it's not a company that is sitting alone and saying, okay, we've invested in electricity and water, that's our core business, but it's also opening its mind and diversifying into areas that are new and upcoming. So it's being bold in investing in these new areas, and that will work well for the company as such.
Okay, so a bit of future-proofing there. Is this stock basically a population play, though? Is it a case that if the Dubai population increases, Diwa's fortunes will increase?
It's a bit of both, right? Because if the population doesn't increase, then you're kind of stagnating in the market. But then you have to look at the plans of Diwa. It's not planning to restrict itself to Dubai. There has been talk about the district cooling firm moving into regional markets as well. So there are talks of expansion into Saudi, expansion into Qatar, and so on. So it is not limiting itself to just Dubai or the UAE specifically, but it's kind of trying to broaden its horizon into the regional markets as well. And Dubai has a very good story in terms of its macroeconomic fundamentals and the way it's been rolling out reforms in this post-COVID recovery scenario. So you can expect that there will be population growth. So it's not necessary that, you know, it's a bad thing to rely just here on the Emirate alone. So what you're targeting is, I think they're targeting about 5.8 million in terms of population by in 2050 or so. So they're working towards it, and at the same time broadening its scope in terms of diversifying into regional markets and not just limiting itself to Dubai.
Quickly, Athira, we've got 1 minute left with you. You mentioned district cooling there, and Saeed Al-Tayer also mentioned MPower and plans to list. What are you making of that?
It's probably depends on how successful this IPO will be. I assume that they will have attract sufficient bids over and above what they are expecting. So there is bound to be some and a lot of interest from the institutional investors and, of course, from the retail side. If all goes well and the listing goes okay and there's a lot of liquidity after it's listed, then MPower has a very, very strong case to follow Diva's footsteps and go for a listing very soon.
Very quickly, we've had a question in from a listener. Abdul Salam writes in, will this IPO maybe limit Diva's capabilities to invest freely, as they're going to have to pay a dividend and be a slave to quarterly earnings results? Just 20 seconds on that.
Not particularly. I mean, they've been performing quite well. So in terms of giving the dividends, it should be quite a straightforward. They must have done the calculations and seen what's the right fit. So I do not think that it will limit the capabilities. They will not be, they will not be focused on just the dividend part of it, but they will continue to do what they've been doing in supporting the Dubai's infrastructure and economy.
Athira Prasad is the Director of Macroeconomics at NASA Saeedi and Associates, talking to us about that upcoming Diwa listing. The company is going to start selling shares in a week and a bit and list on the DFM shortly after.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Yeah, talking cybersecurity this morning, delighted to be joined on the line by the head of engineering at Dubizzle, Harris Ali Khan. Harris, good morning. Thanks very much indeed for being with us.
Thank you.
Joining us on the line and also on Microsoft Teams. So tell us, what are you seeing in terms of cyber attacks at the moment, and what steps are you and others taking to combat this?
So I think post-COVID, during COVID itself, I think majority of the people turned to online space for the needs. I think majority of the digital websites and platforms have seen an increase, and Dubizzle as well. There are different types of scams that we are seeing and threats. There are certain threats that try to bring down the websites. Those can be mitigated by different, and they call bot mitigation. But we do see an increase in scam and frauds. Although in total, for example, the number of tickets that we get on a monthly basis is in tens of thousands, the percentage of fraud is relatively small. I think it's 0.2% that we see. And they are of different types. One of the common ones that we see is people try to pretend as they are from either Dubizzle or some other third party and try to deliver the items. So they ask you to pay online on a random website, might look very similar to Dubizzle or any other. And those are some of the things that we see.
This is one of the big issues, and we get this from our listeners and colleagues as well, is that a popular website and a well-known trusted brand name like yours, you're the kind of name that people try to impersonate, aren't they? If you're going to send a phishing email, you're going to try and pretend to be a respected name like Dubizzle. How big a problem is this?
It's definitely a problem. We see this regularly, and I think various sources, you'll receive awareness campaigns being run by different platforms that includes like banks and other places, because this is slightly easier to enact. And people do fall for it, especially folks that are not used to digital space, and they don't scrutinize the things that they see, which is the reason why we as a platform, we are running a couple of awareness campaigns with Emirates Post to make sure that people are more vigilant online and what to look for. Also on the pet section of our platform, we have seen a few scams there. So we're right now working with animal welfare centers to sort of promote their listings and promote their advertising. So to make it very easy for users to see the right advertisements. We're also doing several social media campaigns. I think over here, prevention is always better than cure, and it applies to this as well. I think the more people are vigilant online, it'll make it easier for them to also see what is suspicious and then have the guard up and just go through, do the research, do not just click on random links, investigate a little bit more, verify with some of the, so if they're dealing with, say, Doobzil, then there are different ways that you can contact us to validate whether this is authentic or not. And we try to do that as much. I think in this also, one of the biggest factors is that keep within the trusted communication channels. For us, this is chat. So we try to suggest users to be within, because that's something that we can control, we can moderate as well. As soon as people go outside in different communication channels, it's very difficult to moderate that. One interesting feature that we have recently launched to tackle and improve the trust and safety is we now give ability to the users on classifieds and community section of ours to hide the phone number. So this now basically forces people to just chat on our platform. And this gives an ability for the seller to hide the phone number. And they can control if they like being contacted by phone, then that's fine. That's their choice. But they can now control that. So hopefully this will also prevent a lot of fraud, or at least attempted fraud, because one thing that we also see is people are getting vigilant. More reports are coming in, but people are not falling for those scams as much. So I think there you can see that most users now are starting to get more vigilant. They know how to tell the difference between a genuine sort of request or a message versus a scammy one.
Well, I wish I could say that was true of myself, but I fell for the Emirates Post scam only a few months ago, and it cost me thousands and thousands of dirhams. Yeah, you get a link saying, oh, you need to pay 20 dirhams because we've got some parcel arriving for you. Clicked on it, paid it, and go, oof, absolutely skinned on that one. I'm not proud to admit it. Harris, talk to me about the pet scam. What's that?
So there are different kinds, but I think the one that we see is like people often contact users from international numbers, and they'll be like, we are abroad. This is pet. I cannot come back to the country. Can you adopt? And then obviously there's a payment online as well. Sometimes the pets are sold by potential breeders. So we are curbing on that quite a bit now. We're working with two of the well-known animal welfare centers where we are going to promote those ads, and those ads will be higher up. And we're trying to bring more transparency and curb who places the ad on that section.
Harris, preventing cybercrime is a team sport, not a solo sport, isn't it? Doobzil, as big as you are, you can't solve this on your own. Nobody can. Who are you working with? I know, for example, the banks, you're doing a lot of work with them, cybersecurity companies as well. Tell us about how that's working.
So in the past, to be honest, we to strengthen the security of the platform, we have worked with different companies in the past to run security tests on our platform just to make sure that the platform is secure. We don't directly work with the banks. We work via our payment gateway. So majority of our dealings is with them. And to be honest, we don't see a lot of activity there in relation to scam itself. And within the group, because as a group, we are in the digital space, we do have quite a bit of help in terms of security within the group. So whenever there's a need, there are different people that you can reach out and help. But over the years, obviously, we have matured also as a platform. We have certain things to prevent the platform being attacked or scraped, which I mentioned earlier, which is more around bot mitigation. So we work with other third parties to have that layer of sort of protection on the platform itself.
Harris, great talk to you. Appreciate your time this morning. That's the voice of Harris Ali Khan, head of engineering at Doobzil, with some tips on how to avoid being scammed in terms of cybersecurity. Not, of course, an issue limited to Doobzil, but across the online world.
Funny, I'm looking, speaking of the online world, at some new data that's come out from the guys at Adobe, their Digital Economy Index. As you would expect, e-commerce has gone through the roof in the last couple of years of the pandemic, but they've tried to put a figure on how much of that isn't extra shopping, but is just inflation. Because when we talk about, online spend's gone up to 1.7 trillion, which is what it did over the last 2 years, you have to realise that about 10 to 15% of that is just the fact that it costs more to buy stuff than it did 2 years ago.
Oh, right. So if my e-commerce bill has gone up from 1,000 a year to 1,100 a year, a lot of that is just the fact that deodorant's more expensive.
Exactly. It's not necessarily only more boxes turning up at the front door.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.